Welcome to episode 5 of the Conversations on Death podcast. My name is Lorena and I'm your host for the Conversations on Death podcast. Death is the one thing we all have in common, yet it's one of the most taboo subjects in our culture. So I invite you, dear deathling, to join my guests and I as we dive deep into everything death related, and in the process, learn about the many lessons death has to teach us, the living. Welcome, welcome, everybody. So on today's episode, I talked to Elisa Fornere, who is a writer and a facilitator who creates spaces for people to explore their grief. So after Elisa lost her mom, she became really committed to making sure that there's a bunch of conversation around grief, death, and dying, which obviously I find amazing. She's the founder and host of the Dead Moms Club, which we'll get into in the episode as to why it's called that. But this is a space where those who have lost their mom can connect in person and virtually through different events. So on the episode today, we essentially talk about all things grief related. We talk about her story and how she came to do what she's doing, her work around grief, misconceptions around grief, how grief impacts your body, grief routines, how to support a grieving friend, different resources that are there for grieving, dealing with grief in the workplace. And of course, we also talk about the Dead Moms Club. Just as a side note, guys, this episode was recorded the weekend right after Mother's Day. So if you hear us reference that in the middle of the episode as last weekend, that's the reason why. And also, it's the audio at times, like the first 20-ish minutes, is a little iffy. And I got Elisa to fix it midway through. Fix it as much as possible. But yeah, just wanted to let you guys know. And, you know, I'm trying here. It's only episode 5, so I'm learning how to make this podcast sound better. But hope you put up with it. And I hope you enjoyed today's episode. So let's begin. Cool. All right, Elisa, thank you so much for joining me today after a very long weekend that I know you had. So let's just start and tell me a little bit about how, you know, you came to be doing what you're doing now and a little bit of your life story.
Yeah. So thank you for having me. I got into the death space at the end of 2015. I was working with a designer at the time, and we were both laid off from the company we were working at in the food space. And so we said, you know, like, we want to continue working together. Let's do something creative. What's the most bizarre topic that we could do our first project on? So we said death. And so we were working on a couple of different print projects. We were doing events. We were doing photo shoots all around the topic of death, but in this really abstract and artistic way. So we were talking about like playlists that you can have at your funeral. We were talking to people that had studied ancient cultures and their responses to death. And we were looking at like different ways we could find recipes for funeral teas in the South. Like, it was so random.
That's so cool.
Yeah, it was really fun. And it was so creative. And for us, it was like an opportunity to look at this topic and approach this topic in a creative way. And then about a month before we went to print with the biggest part of the project, with which was a broadsheet newspaper, my mom went into the ICU and died. So I'd been working on this project for about a year. She went into the hospital right after my little sister's wedding, and I was like pretty deep in the death world at this point. I'd been having lots of conversations about it, and like I said, looking at it in this abstract way, but I wasn't digging into anything personal. I hadn't been thinking about how it applied to my life. I hadn't been thinking about my own grief. And then when my mom died, I was like, oh, okay, this is something I actually need to deal with personally and think about in more of a micro level than on a macro, just like, let's talk about this and have conversations about it in general. So as a writer, I pivoted all of the work that I was doing to like grief, processing my own grief, writing about my own grief, and then talking to others about their grief and how they processed that. So that's how I got into the space. And I've been working in it specifically focused on how people can support themselves and others through grief since like late 2016. And at this point, I serve like a couple of different audiences. Of course, people that want to support their friends and families, but don't know where to start. And then also people who are grieving loss and death in any capacity, but more specifically, like for this weekend, people who have lost their moms like I did.
Yeah, yeah. I wanted to touch on that. So did you find that getting into this space helped you process your grief better by talking about it and exposing your story?
Yeah, absolutely. I think what was really helpful was, as a writer, the way that I articulate things is typing them, writing them, structuring them, getting them down on paper. And so it allowed me an outlet to do that. I just ended up doing it on a public scale. And when I was doing it publicly, it meant that people could respond and say, you know, your story resonates with me, or I've been in a similar situation. And that allowed me to find a lot of strength and a lot of purpose in talking about this outside of just like my family or my friends. So I think it helped me a lot because it allowed me to find connection with others who were going through something similar and who needed to talk about things the same way that I did. So, yeah. You know, it was mutually beneficial for the readers that found my work and the people that came to my events, and then also for me, because it gave me the space that I needed.
Right. So I wanted to touch a little bit on kind of misconceptions around grief for those who maybe haven't experienced it. So they don't really know what it's like, except maybe, you know, they saw some chart or something online describing what it's supposed to look like.
Yeah, I can speak from my experience. I think people talk a lot about the stages of grief, and Dr. Kubler-Ross's concept and a lot of the work that she did around that are incredible and really enlightening. But I think that people have misinterpreted them to read them as, you know, the stages are 1 through 5, 1 through 7, whatever, you know, there's different versions, but, and you go through them in a certain order at a certain time for a certain amount of time, and then it ends. And then you're like done with your grieving, or you've like completed your grieving process, or you're over your grief. And one of the things that I think I realized quite quickly, was that that is a misconception, and it can be incredibly detrimental because it can, one, make you feel like you're not grieving in the right way. Two, when you think that, it makes you think that there is a right way to grieve and there's not. And three, that anything else that you experience that's outside of those 5 stages is wrong, or there's something wrong with you if you're experiencing it. So for example, one of the things that I experienced, like I said, my mom died, right after my little sister's wedding. And when she died and I just got married this last September, I was feeling this like deep, deep jealousy for the fact that, you know, my little sister got to have our mom there at her wedding. And I was like, jealousy seems like something I shouldn't be feeling, or jealousy seems like something that's out of place here. Shouldn't I just be like grateful that she was at, you know, my sister's wedding? Or shouldn't I just be feeling one of those stages specifically, like anger? No, like my jealousy was real. It was valid. And, you know, I had to learn to own that as being a specific part of what my grief was. And I think that it's really hard because we're told so often that, you know, like I said, you're supposed to grieve in a certain way. And if you're not doing it that way, then you're doing it wrong. And it, like I said, could just be so detrimental and make you feel like this thing that is so real and so visceral and so profound is incorrect. And it's not. Like, whatever you're feeling is what you're feeling. That's what your body needs. It's what your brain needs. It's what your brain's going to tell you. And you should be able to respond to that without feeling guilt or shame or like you're doing something wrong.
Right. And I know a lot of people who are dealing with grief, maybe after some time, start feeling guilty because they're like, oh my God, I'm not thinking about them every 5 minutes anymore. Like what, how do you deal with that? And do you have any suggestions for people who are feeling that? Or is this just it's okay. Let it happen. I don't know. Tell me more.
Oh my gosh. If I thought about my mom every 5 minutes, I would be like the hottest mess on the planet. I don't want to think about my mom every 5 minutes. I cherish the moments when I'm reminded of her because I see a bird outside the window. I cherish the moments when I miss her because she's not around for a certain experience. But personally, I don't think there's anything wrong with not being completely lost in your grief constantly and overwhelmingly from the minute that you lose someone. I think that there's a lot of talk about and research going into complicated grief and this concept of prolonged grief after a certain period of time. But I think that what I would say to those people is like, unless for some reason you want to be thinking about your person all day, every day, I believe and have talked to therapists and other people about the fact that it's not necessarily healthy to, and it's okay that you're not. And I think that what I would also recommend, similarly to what I said earlier, is like, I just appreciate the moments that I do have where I can enjoy thinking about my mom or enjoy remembering my mom or enjoy talking about my mom or enjoy grieving my mom and feeling sadness as I miss her. Because that's what my brain and my body are telling me, like, this is what you need to do right now. You need to be thinking about her right now. You need to have this memory. You need to have this moment. You need to honor it. And then when it's done, like, I go back to work or I go back to sleep or I get up and I start my day. And I think that recognizing that that's okay is incredibly important.
Absolutely. How would you compare before your mom died to after? How did grief affect your everyday, you know, day-to-day life, like at work or just physically? I kind of wanted to talk a little bit more about how grief actually affects the body and I guess the relationships that you have around you and what are some ways to deal with that?
Yeah, it's a really layered question. So I think I'll try and take it chronologically and then think about how it's impacted me emotionally and physically. So before my mom died, I hadn't really experienced any significant loss that impacted me the way that her dying did. And I think that what it caused me to do in the beginning was feel a lot of stress, feel a lot of overwhelm, and feel like I needed to take control of something. And I think that was something that I recognize now, especially with having a history of an eating disorder, when you need to find control over something and you need to find control over something in your life or something that's like an external experience that you're having, you can find it and you can access it in ways that are just like control times a million. So with my mom, I, you know, was like, I have no control. I'm really frustrated with this situation. She's gone and I can't have her back. So I am going, I don't know, do you curse on your—
Yes, please.
Okay, I was gonna ask, like,
please.
And this is how I felt and reflecting on it with my grief counselor after. I was like, I need to plan the fuck out of her funeral.
Yeah,
I'm gonna plan this so well. I'm gonna control everything. I'm gonna have, like, you know, everything from like how far apart the chairs are spaced to like how many shrimps, exactly the perfect number that we need to feed everybody. Like, I needed to regain that control in a way. So I got, you know, the opportunity to like exercise that in planning her funeral, and feeling a lot of stress. And like, that was kind of how I directed my energy. And then after that, there were, you know, it was a roller coaster, and that's kind of how I describe it. Like, it's been a roller coaster for the years that she's been gone. And it's this experience where, you know, sometimes I do need control again because I'm like, oh, this anniversary is coming up. Like, I just got to be able to do something similar with Mother's Day. I just planned like this huge event, 32 events in 3 days. I didn't need to do that. I chose to do it because I knew it was something that was going to give me control over a weekend when I felt incredibly, incredibly sad and overwhelmed and like I was missing her. I have those moments where I feel like I need control and I'm like doing this motion to you right now where I'm like going up on the roller coaster. I also have those moments where I feel incredibly just exhausted and drained, and like there's nothing, like nothing in the world that could possibly get me out of bed or get me off the couch or get me interested in going out to see friends. And then at the same time, since her death, I think one of the things that I've realized most incredibly is that I feel these beautiful moments of joy and these beautiful moments of gratitude with my dad and my friends, and even on my wedding day, that at times can feel a little weird. I'm like, why am I so happy right now? Like, and it's because I wouldn't have the relationship that I have with my dad if my mom hadn't died. Like, there are very specific things related to grief and death that we are working through and that we're experiencing right now and that are bringing us together closer, that couldn't have happened if my mom hadn't died. And I think it's less for me about like, okay, I feel anger, I feel jealousy, I feel sadness, I feel joy. Like, I think it's less about, oh, I feel joy because I'm trying to find a silver lining. But it's like, no, I'm appreciating one of these emotions along with all of the other ones that I feel, because it's very true to what this experience is meant to be for me. And sometimes it's meant to bring me some joy. So that's like emotionally. I mean, every day is different. You know, like I could wake up tomorrow and just be in bed for the next 2 months and not be able to get out and be like, I'll never feel joy again. But I think it's been really important to acknowledge, well, to put myself in situations where I access my feelings, acknowledge them, and then like respect them and let them be whatever they need to be. And then physically, I think when I think about how it's maybe impacted me physically, there's a couple of different ways that I can speak to. One is like the way that it's made me think about health and having control over my health and taking care of my body. You know, I think we talk a lot about, especially I was talking to a panel about this weekend, and they were saying one of the things as a young person who's getting ready to have kids, after a parent has died, one of the biggest fears that you're going to have is that you're going to die young like your parent did, and that you're going to leave your kid. And so it can cause us to feel like, oh, we need to have control of our health. We need to have control. We need to set things up in a right way, or like we need to make sure that our kids are as taken care of as possible. And for me, I've definitely noticed that where I'm like, I need to be healthy because I need to like take care of myself so that, you know, when my husband and I start having kids, or like, even if we couldn't have kids and he was just around, like, I want to be around for him. I want to be around for my dad. I want to be healthy and available and like care for my body in the ways that I need to, which like in the beginning, whatever, in the beginning after it was just like a lot of whiskey and like laying on the couch and eating whatever I wanted. Mm-hmm. And that was really good for me at that time. Yeah. And I would not trade that for like going to the gym. But I think now what I'm sort of seeing myself cycle through is taking care of my body. And then the other thing physically is just exhaustion, like feeling deep, pure exhaustion in every part of my body, from my brain, like truly not being able to compute information, like being that exhausted. Also just being like physically tired, having my muscles and my bones and my body and my teeth and my toes and everything ache because my body is just telling me, you're still grieving. You'll be grieving in 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years, however many years. And sometimes I do push myself to the point where my body has to say, like, get back in bed. Like turn the light off,
yeah, chill out,
and give yourself a break and chill out. And I feel that physically probably far too often, but yeah.
Okay. I read, I think it was one of your blogs. I don't know, somewhere, about a grief routine. So I just wanted to hear a little bit more about that since this is kind of related.
Yeah. So I wrote a piece, recently, specifically because of quarantine. And one of the things that it's done that I've been talking to people about is the fact that like grieving is already really, really fucking hard. Like it can already be really exhausting. It can already be really hard. Yeah. It already throws so much of your life and your experience and your routines out of whack. So the things that you would normally get up and do, you know, for me before my mom died, like get up, shower, brush my teeth, eat my breakfast, go to work, come home, see my people, and go to bed. When someone dies, it can throw all of that out of whack. And it can mean you don't want to get up. You forget to brush your teeth. You are on bereavement leave, so you're not going to work. You don't want to see your friends, so you stay home alone. And then you can't sleep at night. And then to throw this layer on top of it, of being in quarantine, being, you know, in the situation where so many of us are sheltering in place still, that throws another layer of complexity where it's like, okay, I really wasn't doing well maybe after my person died, but I've gotten back to a place where I can have routine and now it's thrown out of whack again, or I really haven't been doing well. And then this is another reason why it's going to make me harder to get back to that routine. So there are little things that I noticed for me personally that make it easier, to navigate times like this where I'm like I'm in my bedroom right now doing this interview. My husband is like right across from me in our living room, and we're in a 500 square foot apartment, and finding space to just like be sad sometimes or like make sure that I have time alone is not always a possibility. And so I think, you know, what I've been thinking about in terms of routine is it's really important if there are those little things that make you feel like you have control, or that make you feel like it's helping you get through the day, or make you feel like you can return to any sense of normalcy that will help you manage your grief. It can be really incredible to exercise those. So, for example, a couple of the things that I've been thinking and talking about a lot is like, you know, if you normally would wake up and, you know, whether you're thinking about your person or not, and get out of bed and get in the shower and then go to work, get out of bed, get in the shower and go to your desk, and keep that sense of normalcy so that your grief, while it's compounded with that, isn't another thing that is changing, like, and that your work routine isn't another thing that's changing. In addition to that, you know, like one of the things that I think can be really important is creating new routines. So we're in the situation right now where like, yeah, I get out of bed, I take a shower, I like go sit at my desk. One of the things that I need when I'm like sitting in my apartment all day, every day, like 10 feet away from my husband, and it's just the two of us for the last like 2 months almost, is like, okay, I need to find a way to have time where I can talk to my dad, for example, and be alone, or where I can go for a walk and be alone, or where I can go think about my mom and be alone. So creating a new routine has been an opportunity for me to like handle and address my grief, but in a way that isn't necessarily like huge, where it's like, I'm going to go find a new therapist to go to in the middle of quarantine. Well, I can't actually go see a therapist. Like, that's just too much. But taking a walk and like making myself stick to that so that I know that I'm actively and proactively creating space to deal with my grief and, you know, think about my mom has been incredibly important.
Absolutely. I think that's really important. Okay. So I wanted to ask you about how one can support a grieving friend, because at least for me, I find it really, I don't know, it's just awkward for me when I want to support a grieving friend, but I feel like anything I'm going to say is pointless because obviously I can't do anything to bring that person back. So I don't know what to say. I don't know if I should say something. And I was looking at your website and you have different cards kind of talking about like the stupid things that people say. I wanted you to talk about that and what we can say instead.
I think the first thing that I would say in response to what you just expressed, and, you know, I appreciate that you're vulnerable and can say like, what I feel is that, you know, I can't say anything to bring the person back, so it feels pointless. If you were my friend, I would never expect you to bring my mom back from the dead. And I think that's something that you do need to remind yourself of sometimes, is like, what I need is for people to listen to me and be present with me, not to try and solve all of my problems, because that's not what I expect you to do. Maybe I expect a therapist or a counselor to help me work through some issues, or maybe a spiritual leader or someone, you know, in my wider community. But when it comes to supporting friends, I think that you as a friend should definitely take the pressure off of yourself. And remember that there are little things that you can do that the people in your life actually need, that are going to be way more helpful than you like trying to spend time figuring out how you're going to solve all of my problems. And so usually when people ask me, you know, oh, my friend just had a miscarriage, or my friend's parent just died and they're grieving, what can I do? The first thing that I say is, okay, well, one, what do you actually like doing? And two, what do you actually have capacity and time for? Because I think one of the biggest issues that we run into is offering to do things that we can't actually do, or don't actually want to do, or don't have the time to do, or don't have the resources to do. And when you think about it, we are friends with that person and are good at supporting that person, probably in a lot of different ways, death and grief aside. If your friend has gone through a breakup, or, you know, if they've lost a job, or they, whatever sort of loss they've experienced in their life, you've probably supported them in other ways. And I think that though death feels scary and feels like horrifying and feels like the worst thing that in the world that could possibly happen to them, a lot of the tactics that you would have in other situations to support them can be incredibly useful at a time like this. So one of the things that I tell people, I'm like, okay, what do you like to do? If you enjoy cooking, like, you can cook for them. You don't have to solve all of their problems. If you don't enjoy cooking though, like, don't offer to cook them dinner every day of the week. If you don't enjoy cooking, offer to send them the groceries, offer to, you know, order them takeout every Tuesday night, but you don't have to be the support person that does every single thing that they need. And then I think in addition to that, the second part of what I ask people is, what do you actually have the time and capacity for? If you work a full-time job and have a bunch of kids and need time with your partner or need time with yourself, I don't think that it is fair or safe to offer to someone that you will be available around the clock to come take care of them anytime they're mm-hmm. crying and they need it. What you can offer is very clear boundaries around what it is that you're capable of, and say, oh, you know, every Tuesday, my family goes to the park and I don't need to go with them. So if you want 30 minutes, I will give you that 30 minutes every Tuesday, because that's something that you can practically and realistically commit to. So you're not letting yourself down by putting too much pressure on yourself, and you're not letting your friend down by setting unrealistic expectations for what they can expect from you as a support person. And I think in response to the cards that you've seen that I made, I worked with a designer in Toronto and was just so interested in seeing cards that aren't, first of all, doves and angels and just telling people that everything is beautiful and it's going to be fine. I can't with that shit. I just can't. Yeah. I can't stand it, and because it didn't help me, you know? And so I worked with her on a couple of cards. One of them specifically is, I can't make it better, but I can make you dinner. And that's something that I think is a really fair thing to say as a friend who's supporting someone. Similarly, I think the other one says, I'm not going to ask you to stop crying, but I'm going to ask you to drink while you do it. I think one of the greatest things is, it's so hard, and maybe you've experienced this before, but when you're trying to support someone and they're don't cry, it's okay, everything's going to be fine. I don't
right.
need to hear
and
that.
It's not going to be fucking fine. So let me, yeah.
Yeah, it's not.
Yeah. Wow. I love it. There was another one there. I think that was my favorite one. I can't remember what it said now.
There's one, everything happens for a reason.
Oh, yes,
I
that one.
It's like a lady giving two middle fingers.
Yes, yes. I love it. I love it. I think it's such a different way to look at this, and real way to look at this, which is missing, yeah. I think. So aside from kind of the personal aspect of being there and supporting your friend, what are some resources that we could point them to when we can't be enough, you know, helpful enough, I guess?
Yeah. So, you know, this is what the crux of my work is, and what I hope my work will continue to grow into, is helping people navigate their grief and find the resources that are specific to them and will actually help them. Because even though at the end of the day, yeah, I don't do the doves and the angels and, you know, the self-help books that are like, you're going to get over this, you'll be fine, just give it 6 months. Some people do need that. And some of your friends might need that. And, you know, I had a conversation with a colleague yesterday who was like, it's so weird the way that you talk about this stuff. Like, I can't believe that you refer to it as the Dead Moms Club. And I'm like, that's cool. You can say that. You don't need, and her mom's dead. And she was like, it's just so weird for me. Like, I could never imagine. And I'm like, that's fine. Like, right. You don't need to imagine. I'm not trying to get everybody on board with what I'm doing. I think it's just the purpose of what I've been doing is to create a new voice in the space that helps people talk about this in a different way. So when it comes to the newer, more, I guess, edgy voices in the space that I've really appreciated, there's some books that I recommend, like Ty Alexander's book, Things I Wish I Knew Before My Mom Died. You know, she talks about letting out your thug tears and being able to own like the fact that you don't need to give a shit if your family feels like you're grieving the right way. Similarly, there's sites like Modern Loss that I think are an incredible collection of resources for people who are sharing their stories about their loss and reflecting on their stories about loss, but from a lot of different backgrounds and a lot of different angles. So that's usually something that I'll point a lot of people toward when they're like, I don't know if I want the doves and angels. I don't know if I want somebody to be real with me. And I'm like, okay, go here. Look at the topics. This is a really good place to start because you'll start seeing what kind of voice and tone and approach to this resonates with you. And then, you know, books and websites are great. And then in addition to that, I think sometimes one of the best things is like, I like when my friends support me with things that don't require me to like learn and read.
Yeah,
and
make it like easier for me. Yeah.
So I have had friends do things as small as like sending me a playlist and saying, I was thinking about you this week. I made this playlist. It's all Beyonce and Britney Spears. Like, I know you just needed a pickup. And to me, that means, you know, we don't have to talk about my grief. You aren't directly acknowledging like and using the words like grief and your mom died and you might be sad because it's Mother's Day. But sending something that helps me like access it, feel a little better, feel a little stronger can be really important. And so I have friends that send me everything from like recipes to memes to playlists. And I think that can be just as valuable as being like, here, read this book that's going to tell you that how you're feeling is okay. Because some days I need that. And some days like all I need is like a cactus to be sent to me. And I'm like, this is what I needed. I needed something mm-hmm. green in my life to feel like I could keep yeah. something alive.
So since you mentioned the yeah. Dead Moms Club, I wanted to hear more about it. What, mm-hmm. what happens at the Dead Moms Club and how did you come up with that name?
Yeah. So Kate Spencer actually wrote a book called The Dead Moms Club years ago. And it, you know, from her experience and from so many people's experience after losing a mom, you're told that you've joined this club. And I was told that by a friend whose mom died years before mine. And when my mom died, they said, you know, you're in this club now. People are going to treat you different. They're going to talk to you differently. You know, you're going to get those platitudes. You're going to get the sad looks. You're going to get the pity. But then on the flip side, you will be able to connect with people who know exactly what you're going through on those days, like my wedding, where I was like really angry or really sad. And everyone says, you know, the point of your wedding is that you're like, it's the most beautiful day of your life. And my photographer who I was working with because her mom was dead, I was like, you need to be here because I need someone here who's going to be able to like help me shut those people down and connect with me in a way that nobody else can, because they will not understand what it's like for me to experience this day with the loss that I've had. And so, you know, I've been creating this space and creating these events, for example, like Motherless Mother's Day, where it's like we can all connect over this shared loss and not give each other those like sad pity faces when you say, oh, yeah, my mom died in 2005 or 2010 or my mom died last week, because we've all gone through it. And we know that those are not helpful. Like those looks are not helpful. The pity is not helpful. We got enough of it from the people in our lives who didn't know what we were going through. And so to be able to come together through like a digital platform, through the resources that I create or through events, when we can do in-person events again safely one day, the purpose of it was to give people space where they can avoid all of the crappy stuff that comes from the people outside of the circle, and really find like community and connection with the people who are inside of it.
In terms of the crappy stuff, I heard you on another podcast talk about what it was like for you in the workplace when it first happened and those experiences that you had. And I just wanted my listeners to hear that too, because I couldn't believe it. But
yeah. I mean, that was such a huge part of just getting into this work, was realizing like, because you get really, for me at least, and I don't know what it's been like for you, but like I from people who appreciate it, they're like, oh, this is so amazing. Like, I love that you talk so openly about this. I so appreciate that you're willing to have mm-hmm. public conversations about this. And then like you step outside your door and other people are like, oh my God, right. Why are you talking about this?
So
why do you
want to
have these conversations? Yeah. I don't want to think about death. Yeah. Like you're weird. What's wrong with you? And the workplace was definitely one of the hardest environments that I had to navigate after my mom died because of my employer and my manager's inability to sort of meet me in the middle when I was struggling and was trying to figure out ways that I could continue working because I really wanted to be at work. And like, I didn't go back to work involuntarily. Like, I knew that I was returning to the workplace mm-hmm. permanently and that I really wanted to be there. And so I was struggling at the time with a manager who said a lot of things and did a lot of things like telling me, you know, your colleagues, like, we can't have everyone walking around eggshells, like, or walking around on eggshells around you. And like, you can't just run off every time a day is hard. We all have hard days. And, you know, got to a point where I was meeting with my manager and, some leadership at the company and them telling me like, we come here to do business and you need to check your dead mom at the door, like check your grief at the door. This is not the place for it. And when you leave, like, we won't judge you for what you do outside of here. And yeah, I quit that job.
Yeah, good.
Like, not long after.
Oh my gosh. Check your mom at the door. That's so horrible. Do you think this is like, it happens in other workplaces as well? Cause people don't know how to, you know, deal with it.
Oh, it happens everywhere. And the amount of people that I've had conversations with after who are like, I'm like, I've quit my jobs. I've had to leave. I've had to take extra bereavement leave because of the way my employer treated me. People who I met a woman a couple of years ago who was like, oh, your story resonates with me because I'm suing my employer for the way that they talked to me and treated me while I was like dealing with my bereavement. And I think it happens so mm-hmm. regularly and for so many people that I'm now working in the HR tech space, like as my day job, because I think that there is a huge gap in how employers are trained about grief, what kind of access they have to like grief support materials and how they support their employees through grief. Like, there's just such a huge opportunity for people to be doing better. And I'm really hoping for that because it's just, work is one of the hardest places because you have so little control. And on the hardest days when you really just want to be at home, even if you're at work and you're happy to be there, you know, 4 out of the 5 days a week, there's still those days where it's impossible for some people to just go home when that's mm-hmm. what they really want or what they need. So you find yourself struggling through, you know, like I mentioned probably in the podcast, one of the hardest things was like, I found myself just going into the bathroom and crying or going into the elevator and crying mm-hmm. or going outside and like trying to push down my grief or get rid of my grief. And I think if there were better ways that we had to talk about it with our managers or with the people that we work with, it would be a completely different environment for people to grieve in a way that was supportive and positive. And
from your research, do you find that companies and organizations even are trained on how to talk to employees about grief at all? Or what's like an actionable way, do you think, for organizations to go about gaining the resources to teach their employees how to deal with it?
Yeah, so some definitely are. I think that there's two things. There are people who work in companies that have gotten formal training and they're probably incredible at it. I've had some leadership since leaving that horrible, horrible job that have just been incredible with me, like around my grief and my mom. And I've come and like, they're like, oh, like, we're so on board with this. You should come present in the workplace. And it's like, great, you're on board with this. I think the thing is too, though, like, you don't have to have formal training necessarily to be able to care for someone in their grief. I think that there is a level of emotional intelligence and like cultural safety that you can have and create for people that will allow them to deal with their grief without you having to like spend hundreds or thousands of dollars just to get someone to come mm-hmm. in and talk to you about it. At the same time, I think for the people who don't necessarily have that innate within them, there are lots of different resources and boot camps and workshops that you can take employees through that specifically help leadership figure out how to navigate grief and loss. And I think as we're looking to the future of what work is going to look like right now, especially with people dealing with collective grief, in a pandemic like this, and then also our personal grief, which each of us are experiencing in different capacities on our own, there's a very serious need for everyone in the workplace to figure out how to talk about death and grief, because it is going to be very front of mind for a lot of people. And I think as much as trainings are great, having it in you is great. There's also like a middle ground where, you know, just educating yourself about this at all, reading articles that are posted all over the internet and so readily available for people, by people like me or others who have written about their experience of grief at work, can be just like a really good first step for managers, and employers to understand, okay, like it does go beyond just giving someone 3 days of bereavement leave. When they come back, we will need to support them again. And when they come back, we might need to support them for a while, and it might bleed into how they're working and impact their work and what happens for them physically and emotionally in this space that they have to come to 40 hours a week. Okay, we should probably start thinking about this, and looking into resources and educating ourselves better. Like, I think that's really important.
Yeah. So before I let you go, there are two questions that I always ask. My guest, number one, it's if you were to die tomorrow, how would you like to be remembered?
I think this is a really interesting question, because I think it like plays into this concept of like ego and what I think, do I want to be remembered professionally in a response like this? How do I want to be remembered personally? And I think for me, I think my answer today is that I want to be remembered as a person who always had a smile on their face. I think that I do a lot of work, and am very serious sometimes, and am doing my best lately. And I hope that this is, if I died tomorrow, it would really come through for people that I am doing my best right now to be seen as the kind of person who like is trying to see the positive and the negative, and who's trying to stay positive when things are negative, and who's trying to, you know, provide a little bit of light for people who are struggling. And I think in that, when I thought about it, I was like, with smiling, I think it's also this concept of laughter. Like, I love the fact that I had so many conversations about death over the course of 72 hours this weekend and laughed constantly. And I think that in talking about this and doing this work, I would love if I died tomorrow for people to be like, oh, Lisa was that girl who like did all that grief work, and she laughed about it so much and was always smiling and just seemed to love it so much. Like, that's what would be incredibly important to me.
Beautiful. And the second question is, if you can synthesize all of the wisdom and knowledge that you're gained that you've gained throughout your life into a message that you wanted to share, what would that message be?
Yeah, that we're not going to get everything right. And I think that that's something that I have to remind myself constantly with my mom since losing her. We did not have, you know, and with my mom, and I'll talk about professionally too, it's very painful sometimes, because I didn't have an incredible relationship with my mom. And there are some things that happened right before she died that I feel like, oh, I regret this, or I wish this would have happened differently. And something that I have to constantly remind myself is, like, I didn't know she was going to die the next day. I wasn't thinking that this is how I wanted things to go out between us. I'm never going to get everything right. I'm going to make mistakes. And that's okay, because there are positive, beautiful parts of our relationship that I can reflect on. And it's the same with grief. Like, when I think about it, like, I don't go into support conversations and kind of like I was telling you earlier, like, you're not going to get everything right. Sometimes you'll like say something that's a little fucked up, or you'll say something that hurts someone. But the point is, in remembering that, I hope that it inspires people, because it inspires me, to at least try. And it's like, if you take away the pressure of being perfect and you take away the pressure of being right, I've just really learned in all of this work and from my experiences with my mom and just my experiences over the 31 years that I've been alive, like, it's okay to mess things up. I'm not going to get everything right. And that should make it okay for me to at least keep trying.
Yes. I think that's huge, because in our culture, we want to get things right right away. And if we don't, it's failure. And somehow we've been trained to think failure is not good. So I think that's a beautiful thing to remind ourselves of every day. And how can people get in touch with you if they want to speak to you?
Yeah, my website is alisafornere.com. I can spell it out. I usually spell it out.
It's all good. I'll put it in the notes. Yeah, but in case people, you know, don't feel like clicking on their phone to get to the episode notes, cool. I just wanted you to say it out loud. Awesome.
Yeah, so definitely my website, and my Instagram. I answer like all of my messages on Instagram, so I always encourage people, like, don't think that I'm not going to answer. Please reach out. And my Instagram is at alisa.fornery. And then also my email. I love getting emails and messages from people. My email is hello@alisafornery.com.
Beautiful. All right, Alisa, thank you so much for sharing everything.
Yeah, seriously. Thank you.
Hope you guys enjoyed today's podcast. If you did, please make sure to subscribe. And if you'd like, leave a review on iTunes or wherever you consume your podcasts. It really helps spread the message. Also, if you'd like to connect with me, follow me on Instagram @conversationsondeath. And I will talk to you guys soon. Take care.